Again, I come to that. Narada is not a person, by the way. It's a representation of the human mind at the time of Lord Krishna. You see, or you may call one of the mandali, or it's a function, it's an office, you may call. So, we name it as Narada. So Narada once remonstrates and says to the Lord, says, I'm fed up of this life of celibacy here in your presence. We were dealing with celibacy. Who was the person who was there?
Me.
Ah, yes. So I'm fed up of this. So, Lord Krishna says, Narada, what's the matter with you? Why is this sort of eruption from you? Why do you feel so much about it? What's this? So he says, no, I want to get married. Of what use is this? Now I'm getting aged, and I now, when I see around me, I now feel that, well, I must have some assistant in my old age to help me. See, there must be somebody by my side. And I want to get married. And he just remained, he insisted upon his getting married. So Krishna said, many times he told Narada not to harbor such thoughts, that it would be futile, useless. After all these years that he passed by his side, you see, why does he want to get himself entangled and, so to say, throttled by additional burden and responsibilities? He says, well, whatever you may say, you may tell us things like that because you are beyond all this, but we are bound by illusion and we feel the need for somebody to help us by our side when our body is not able to help itself. Somebody must be there to aid us. So, well, Krishna relented and said, all right, Narada, you can have any woman in this town where I am not. So, well, that place, you see, where Krishna lived and his followers lived, well, there were 16,800 women there, the population at that time. And that's why sometimes it is mentioned in mythology that Krishna had 16,808 concubines.
Or wives,
whatever you call them, or consorts, or anything, any word you want to use, you see. Now, it is all symbolic, because what happened is when Narada went there, why it is now said that Krishna had 16,808 wives? Why? Because when Narada was given this license, you see, to go and pick any beautiful woman in the town where he is not, where the Lord is not. So he went wandering, you see, because he wanted to get married. I want a wife, I want a wife, I want a wife. So he went in search of a wife. So what happened is that wherever he goes, what he sees, the woman there, just rocking the swing where Lord Krishna is reclining and relaxing. He watches there and again he sees the face of the Lord, so he passes by with due respect to the Lord, goes to another house. There is a very beautiful damsel there washing the feet of the Lord. Again the Lord appears. He says, oh God, it would have been nice had the Lord not been here, you see. So he goes to another house, and another house, and another house, and another house. And wherever he goes, and Narada being very well known as the close one of Lord Krishna, he had easy access to the house. In anybody's house he could go. So wherever he visited, he found Lord Krishna there. So he couldn't get a wife from the whole town, you see. That's why it is said that Lord Krishna had 16,808 wives. Well, whatever it be, he came back and he was so dejected again. The same old story repeats, you see, with Narada, that he feels hopeless and he doesn't know what to do, and he is there and Lord Krishna says, well, Narada, what happened? Did you have your choice? Could you select anybody? He says, nowhere, Lord, could I find a single woman without you. Wherever I went, you were there. So he says, that's the very reason I say you forget this. See, why do you want to get yourself married unnecessarily? Now that so many years have passed by, few years are left. Pass them by my feet. Remember me all the time. Take me to be whatever you want me to be. And that's all. Why do you want to get yourself just... get yourself, so to say, involved in all these family affairs and all. No, I want to get married. I want a wife. All right. So Lord Krishna said, well, we'll fix a day. So he called all the mandali nearby and says, look here, Narad wants to get married. And we must now help him to find a wife, a bride. He has been trying a lot. He wandered from place to place in the whole town. He couldn't find a single woman fit for him. Why? Because all loved Lord Krishna, you see. There was nobody there, you see, who could love Narad. So what happened is now, it's up to me, Lord Krishna said, to find a bride for this man who wants to get married. Well, we'll do that. So what happens? Now comes the story, you see. He leads Narad and all the mandali, says, because this is something to do with life and death, you see. So he has to be very careful. And that Narad should now have a dip in the river, sacred river, and become pure and clean before anything is decided. So let's go to the riverside, and there they go. And they are just in a playful mood, all the mandali and with the Lord, and Narad is there. So Lord Krishna, in his playful mood, just presses the head of Narad there under the water, you see.
While they are bathing,
you see, and just pins him down, you see. And he's just trying to free himself from the clutches, you see, and want to get out of over the surface of the water to breathe. But he kept him there for a minute, and he was just struggling over there. He didn't know what to do, you see. He was so worried and struggling, you see, to get out, struggling for his life. That's how those who were out of the water felt and witnessed, you see. But what was really happening there, inside, in Narad, was something quite different. And this gives us some concept of times. Krishna releases him. He comes out and he begs of Lord Krishna. He just falls down at the feet of Lord Krishna and says, Lord, save me from a shrew of a woman that... with whom I have been living for nearly 30 years. I have got 6 children, I don't know how to manage with them. And save me from that. It's enough now. When will I get released from all this? So just Lord Krishna, and all the other mandali, you see, who were there, who knew Narad just a minute before. In a minute he passed 30 years of his married life. 40 years, you may call 50 years or whatever it is. But I'm giving you a concept of time. A minute of this earth can be expanded into 30 to 40 years period, you see. But there must be somebody to do that. And that could be done by the Lord of Time himself, you see. Where there is no time and no space. It's all just jugglery, you see. Yeah, it's real sheer jugglery, you see. It's the mind that plays all the tricks, you see. And Narad got so fed up, so disgusted with his married life, that he begs of Lord Krishna to save him. And then again, Lord Krishna blesses him. And the hand that is put on the head is enough to dispel him of all this worry. And he realized that he'd never got married. So then Lord Krishna says, do you now realize and recognize the fact that I have been telling you so often? Why you want to get yourself involved? You have never married, but just see the fun of it. Yes. What would happen? Imagine, he says, what would happen if you were to get married? In fact.
But he must have experienced 40 years time.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, he experienced that. To us it appears to be so absurd and fantastic, but these are the things that can happen, have happened. Modern man is very reluctant to believe this, but one day, very soon, he'll have to believe these things, because even science will prove these things. Time factor can be capsuled in a little capsule of 1 year, you see. 100 years will be capsuled there like that, you see. And you'll have to swallow it, because science has proved it. Now you can't swallow it, you see. So that, there was one person, you see, by name of Bulasha, a child. Of course, now we go back to the period when Bulasha was a child, wanting to learn the alphabets, you see. He went to school. And there, the teacher is there trying to teach him the alphabets. Alif, Be, Pe, Te, Se, you see. In Persian or, yeah. But he was such a dunce, you see, that even the first two or three letters he couldn't grasp, you see. Whereas the children have learned all the alphabets. And the teacher somehow or other took pity on this boy and said, Bulasha, this won't do. You must pick up. What's the matter? He says, sir, I can't remember this. It is so difficult even to learn the first letter. I don't know what to do. So the teacher tried his level best to teach him, to make him memorize this or go over and over again over the formation of the letter, but well, Bulasha couldn't do it. So the teacher got fed up and said, look here, Bulasha, you go wherever you want to go, but you return to the school only after you have learned the alphabets. I have done my best, I can't help you further. It's no use your attending the school. There the poor child, dejected, leaves the school, not knowing what to do, what his parents would ask or would say on the subject, you see. Naturally, he expected a good thrashing from his parents, you see, for being expelled from school like that. Well, Bulasha grew up. Then, of course, he came in contact with a perfect master and all that. And then he was the slave of that perfect master for many years. And then, after passing, I think, a period of 30 years or 36 years, like that, you see, he learned the first letter of the alphabet, called Alif. The first letter of the word Allah, you see, after passing so many years. That is Alif. A. And he was so happy, you see. He didn't crave for any God realization or anything, but that was in his luck, you see. He got in contact with the master, his perfect master. And then he said, yes, now I know what it means, you see. But then, with the grace of the perfect master, he realized. He realized God, and Bulasha now goes to the same school, and the same teacher who is very old there. And the teacher comes out, who is older than Bulasha is, and says, well, what do you want? He says, I am Bulasha, who was expelled from the school and was invited back to the school when I had learned the alphabets. But I'm so sorry to say that I have not learned all the alphabets, but I just learned the first letter in the alphabet. That is the first letter that if you want, I can demonstrate and let the other children here also learn the way I have learned it. He says, what is this in this? Is this a crazy person? Or is he really Bulasha who has grown up? What's the matter? Well, through mere curiosity, the teacher, the old man, permitted him to write down the first letter, you see, and then he writes the Alif there, you see. But the way he had learnt it, and the way he wrote it, you see, and the love that he poured for his own schoolmates, you see, no sooner he put that Alif there, the board cracked. It couldn't stand the weight, so to say, of the letter, the first letter of Allah, you see, in the word Allah. And it cracked. It had such great import, you see. He had learnt it not the way that the teachers taught, but the perfect master taught him, you see. The word Allah, the first letter of the word Allah, let alone Allah, you see. So that is the story. And then he told, then he started giving discourses to the children and to his own teacher, what it is to learn the first letter in the word Allah, let alone the alphabets, you see. You had heard this ayah before, it's a Sufi story of Bulasha. Well, it's borrowed story, it's not my own, or it's from a book.
Second hand.
It's third and fourth hand, you may call it. Well, this is what I read from a book once. Am I right in copyright?
Now, at quarter to five, you have to come over there.
What I read was this, which has fascinated me, and it has stuck into my head, you see. There were two monks, you see, Buddhist monks, and they went out for a walk. See this, it's a fine story.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Yeah. So they went out for a stroll. You know how the monks live in the monastery? Well, they must behave. You see. No side glances, no talk of women, wine, wealth, nothing of the sort. Straight ahead, go back straight, right about turn, that's all. Regimentation, all the time, all the 24 hours of the day. Well, that was the monastic life the monks were supposed to live, so they lived. But there was some sort of relaxation too, you see, that they should mingle with nature and all that, under the pretext of that, you see. They were given the latitude to go out for walks, short walks, to return before it's dusk, you see. Well, the two monks who were close together, you see, they went out. It so happened that it had rained that day. So when they went out, you see, it was all dirt road at that time. So they went out. They walked. They went through the puddles and all that. Pool of water that was there. And they were returning. On their way back, what they found was beautiful damsels, daintily dressed, couldn't cross the road because of the pool of water that was there. And she was waiting with her skirts lifted and all that. Well, the monks were not supposed even to eye her or to just shun her and go away. But one of the monks dared, you see, to lift her up in his arms there like that and just cross the pool and just dropped her there. God's will be done, and they went away. The other monk was so shocked with the act of this friend of his, with the thought that now all the connections will have to be severed. How could a monk dare to do such a thing? And it all the time worked, made a deep impression over his mind, and he didn't know what to do. The whole walk was spoiled when they were about to enter the gates of the monastery, you see. This man couldn't keep quiet. He says, "Brother monk, you know what you have done today? You're not supposed to enter the monastery." He said, what has happened? What have we done? What have you done, say that? Not we. What have I done? He says, "You know, you are not supposed even to see a woman. You have bodily lifted her. You have taken her in your arms and lifted her and carried her." He said, "What's it?" "Oh," he says, "I never knew that. I had dropped her soon after the pool was crossed, but I never knew that you carried her as far as the gate." So that's how our mind is, and our sanctity and our spirituality is. You follow this story, how beautiful it is. He had completely forgotten the act, whereas the other man had brought her as far as the gate. You hadn't read the...
Yes.
You read that
yes,
story?
Yes,
I like it. Beautiful story.
But
Meher Baba, Meher Baba. Baba God man, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba God man, God man, God man, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba God man, He Deva Birthle. He ever deathless, but he come in man form, even for the faithless, but he come in man form. Even for the faithless, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, God man, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, God man, He's here, He's there, He's all everywhere, He's here. He's there, His house, everywhere, and where I am not, He's always found there, He's always found there, He's always found there. Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, God man, Meher Baba, God man, do not do anything while doing everything, do not do anything while doing everything, whatever and he has shown, he is doer and darling, Meher Baba God man, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba God man. God man, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, Meher Baba, God man.
The clutch.
Half is what Baba enjoins and half is also enjoins. Says that you got to obey the king, never mind whatever the orders be. You do not know because you are enveloped in ignorance. You don't know what he is saying, why he wants it. So the best thing for the slave, he says, become a slave of the master. Then only you will be able to obey him. And then ultimately, then in the end he says, why do you have to do that? Because he says, my dear, you do not know what he is saying that for. And that's what Baba enjoined. You just keep quiet. You see that picture with his finger on the nose? Shut up. Just listen to what I say. You forget what I'm telling you. You just obey. That's all. Well, that takes me back to 1923, to Happy Valley, where most of us got these nicknames, myself Padri and Pendu and Bua Sahib and whatnot. Then that was in 1923 where I got the name in Happy Valley. Pendu also got the same name, and there might be few others who got the name there too, but I think they are conked out now. None of them is here now, excepting Pandey and Padri. Well, we had been to Happy Valley. We had free time on our hands. And, you know, Happy Valley bungalow, that bungalow is as big as Mehrabad bungalow, almost as long. And that is, its boundary wall is just about 20 feet away from the veranda. And beyond that is a Shiva temple. There, then we had Gustaji's brother, who was nicknamed Slamson. That chap, he was a mischievous sort of a man. He would like to tease others, and he'd get into an argument, but his mentality was to tease. You know, I was just walking down the veranda, and I look over the wall, and I see about a couple of them sitting with the worshipper, the keeper of the temple, the Shiva temple. And because I had time, I just also thought of going there, and I went there to the temple and sat down there. And Gustaji's brother Slamson was having an argument. It was a healthy argument, teasing sort of way. He was cross-questioning him about spirituality and whatnot and religion. And it was hardly 5 minutes that I went in there, and Baba came on the veranda, looked over the wall, and told somebody, call those chappies there who have gone and talk and are talking to that worshipper in the temple. Well, a shout went, and he said, Baba wants you. Come on, Baba was talking then, you should know. 1923. Well, we come back. Baba just asked, what were you chappies doing there? Just talking. Talking about what? Well, we let Slamson do the talking. Three or four probably. I know I was included. I can assure you three people, all right. And then Baba asks, what were you talking about? Oh, we were talking of spiritual things. Oh. Yeah, very good, very good, yes. What else? Oh, no, nothing at all. Nothing at all. Very good. All right. Pick up your bag and baggage and just walk out. From today onwards, from this second onwards, make that man your guru. I am not your guru anymore. That was straight. Well, Baba was, what is a sort of Jalali then, and it was our training period. We were all novices, and we didn't utter a word. We all of us stood shaking in our boots. Now what to say? We said that, Baba, that was a mistake on our part. Please forgive us. Baba said, go on. Don't stand there. Get out. Get out from today onwards. I am not your guru. That make that chappy your guru. Go on, get out. Not a word from any of us. He again shouted loud, why are you standing there? Didn't you hear me? Aren't you going to obey me? Get out. Out you go, all of you. Take your bag and baggage. Get out. Well, we said again, Baba, please forgive us. We won't go. He says, look, you fools, if you make a guru, make it only one. Make that only one. You follow only one guru, not more than one gurus. That can lead you astray. And since you have made me your guru, you should not go to anybody. He may be a perfect man or not, it's quite a different thing, but you should not leave me. I am forgiving you. Never, never go to anybody. And by heavens, Jim, I tell you, as far as I am concerned, these words are so deeply impressed in my brains that even if I saw a perfect master on the road or a master or anybody, I would never, never go to him. I would never go to him. I'd just pass the road, just walk away with due respect. But I would never go in his vicinity. But when I went to Pune many times, and before departing for Pune, I would ask Baba, and Baba, may I go to Babajan? He would say, of course. Of course, do go to Babajan. He wouldn't say no about Babajan or Upasani. But since I was going to Pune, he allowed me to go to Babajan. I did go to Babajan. She was on my way to my place. And before departing for Bombay again, I would just take a darshan and go back to Bombay. All right. You all might be knowing that Baba had strictly enjoined us and warned us a number of times over that be careful about snakes. If a snake bites you, I will not be able to help you. I'll help you out of any calamity under the sun, mind you. I'm warning you again, I'm giving you a fair warning. Be careful about snakes. Take care. But if some snake bites you, I will not be able to help you. I'm not going to tell you why, but I will not help you at all. So whenever you go out into the night, have a lantern with you and a stick in your hand. If you come across a snake, kill it if you can. But see that you avoid it. That was this instruction. These instructions were given to us a number of times. Now I'm reverting to the night of the 9th of July 1925, the last day he talked. At about 8 o'clock in the evening, before retiring, he used to retire into the hut, the small one-room cottage near where the pilgrims now stay, which is called the Jhopri. Jhopri means the hut. That building was built under Baba's own supervision. In 1923, he got it built himself. Of course, the masons and carpenters were hired, but he supervised the whole job. So he used to retire in the night in that Jhopri with just a watch outside, just anybody, according to the duty given by Baba. It might be just anybody. Just you or I or anybody, makes no difference. But during that time, that man, that watchman, whoever that be, used to sleep. Later on, the night watch always used to be wide awake. All right. So Baba goes to his jhopri in his room, and Pendu's father, Masaji, was the night watchman there. Well, before he departed, he said that from tomorrow onwards I am not going to talk. From tomorrow I'll be silent. I have given you duties, do your duties. And again he enjoined about the snake. I am warning you about the snake. Always go out with a lantern in your hand. I will not be able to help you. He again enjoins it. And he just wishes goodbye and everybody, all right, off to bed. But keep on, although I may not be talking, all the jobs will be done. And you keep to your jobs. We had a school then. School, dispensary and everything. All right, Baba goes to his room, that is Jhopri, the hut. And everybody just talks, starts talking amongst ourselves. Well, Baba said that he is going to be silent. What could it be? What could it not be? Just sort of all sorts of ideas. And everybody preparing to go to bed. Now, the room we lived in was just a tin shed with bamboo matting all around. That was our abode. We would unroll our bedrolls in the night, sleep on it, roll it again, and keep it against the wall during the day. And it would be a big hall, meeting hall, dining hall, and everything. And Baba also would come and sit down there. So, everybody started unfurling his bedroll and preparing to go for bed. I took up a lantern and went into the fields for my final necessities, and I must have gone about 10 steps, and right across my path I saw something shining white. I immediately recognized that it must be a snake. I stopped dead in my tracks. I shouted, "Sanp." Sanp means a snake. I just halted to see where the snake went. I called out, "Bring in sticks." The mandali just collected their sticks. We each had a stick, collected it. It was really a snake. Well, everybody just went for it and it was killed. That created a hubbub, sort of, and Baba heard it. He had already retired into his hut. So he comes back. "Hey, what was the row about?" "Baba, we killed a snake." "Who saw it?" I said. "Well, I saw it." "Well, remember my words? I told you to be careful about snakes. Be careful. It was a good thing you saw it and killed it. Be careful, I'm warning you again. Don't go out without a lantern in the darkness." "All right, now I'm going back. I will come out silent tomorrow." Well, that was the last time we heard his words. And verily, he came out silent the next day, the 10th of July, 1925. But we were all expecting that he might break his silence in a year or two. Well, everybody is welcome to his ideas. Well, you can have your idea, I can have mine. We thought it might be 1 year or 2 years or something, but no, sir. He was a silent master. And in the Hindu mythology is written that one of the avatars, one of the modern, the Kalanki avatars as we call them, one of the, Kalanki, how should I explain? I don't know how to explain Kalanki avatars. The form, it's a form of an avatar, or I don't know how to say it. He will be a silent master. So, that's him. All right, I'll give you the story of a leper who came and joined us as a very healthy man. He was indeed a wrestler. In 1922 in Manzile Mean, and who ultimately died here in Mehrabad. a leper. On both the occasions of the story, I was there when Baba mentioned these facts, so I can give you the first-hand information. Of course, there were others too, but I don't know who they were. I can vouch for myself. In Manjalameen, we had about 30 to 40 people. We were given our respective jobs and were not allowed to go anywhere once we entered the compound of the bungalow. The strict orders were, go to your job straight, come back home straight. Not to go anywhere at all. So we used to catch the train or tram and back to the bungalow. No arguments. I used to go out in the morning. I, myself, Sarosh, Slamson, others who were going to the jobs, we used to go out in the morning, leave in the morning. Our lunch used to come at sight, and we used to return by about 6 o'clock in the evening, and we used to have some games. So, I had, might be a Sunday, I was not on my job, and Baba was just taking cognizance of the facts, and I was with him. Adi's brother Rustam was with him, and the man in the story is of a washerman. We had a barber, we had a washerman to attend to our needs since we were not allowed to go out of the bungalow. Now, Baba once said that before we got this washerman, he said that we must have a washerman to wash the clothes of the mandali because they have got no time, they are all the while with me or are they are going on their jobs. I don't want the clothes sent out of the house. I would like a man on the premises. So Rustam suggested, yes, Baba, I got a man, very good man in Ahmednagar. Can I call him? Baba said, yes, if he is a willing worker, if he would come here, we'd pay him. He came, and that man was given the job of washing the clothes. He used to wash and iron and do everything. That chap, his name was Kashinath. Well, he used to do the job very nicely. And as I said, I was free on that day. That means I had not gone to the job. I was roaming around with Baba. And he just walked into the garage where this washerman used to have his workshop. He used to wash his clothes and iron the things. I remember very well, Rustam was with us. I don't know any other entity then. Baba starts talking with Kashinath, the washerman, talks to Rustam. I was just a spectator. I had nothing to do with it, but I was just as a spectator. Baba talks to him, tells him, Kashinath, listen, you stick to your job. Do the job I have given you, and you'll never repent. And just something here and there, and all of a sudden, Baba asks him a question. Not a question, Baba warns him, gives him a good warning. He says, look, do my job. Do this job here I have given you, and keep off from women, or you will get leprosy. Are you fond of women? Are you debaucherous? Well, that man shrunk. He was a guilty man. Indeed, he was debaucherous. Sort of groaning, half avoiding. just did as I am doing now, you see. And Baba said, look, I am warning you, keep off from debauchery or else you will get leprosy. Yes, Baba, I'll obey your orders. Baba said again, he pointed out, you will get leprosy. Manjali Meem was broken up. We came to Mehrabad. We moved around places. And when Manjali Meem was broken up, that washerman goes back to Nagar. We lose trace of him. Years later, in Mehrabad, that man turns up all of a sudden, afflicted with leprosy. The primary symptoms of leprosy is body swollen, his fingers swollen and everything. When he comes up, I wasn't there, but, well, naturally a leper is an outcast. Outcast of society. So, he comes back again for succor to Baba. Baba, being the compassionate one, he says, all right, you live here. But no job now, being a leper. I was just put in some room here, a room, isolated room. He lived there. His food was supplied from the common kitchen of the mandali. His tea and everything was looked after. After some months of his stay here, again, I was with Baba and this leper comes. Baba was giving audience. Baba used to give audience in this cabin. And Baba was in the cabin just behind the bungalow where there are four emblems of the religion. This cabin was built in 1937. So, it's after sometime after 37. This story has got connection, sometime after 1937. Some of the mandali were there, and luckily, as in the first case in 1922, I again was with Baba when this incident took place of this washerman. Washerman stood at a respectable distance, joined hands, bowed down to Baba. Luckily, I was again the second time when this thing happened. In the first instance, when Baba warned this washerman, keep off from women or else you will get leprosy. Now he had leprosy. He showed all the symptoms of leprosy. And here in Mehrabad, after having lived a number of days, he is in agony. He comes and stands before Baba at a respectable distance, joins his hands, and with tears in his eyes he says, Baba, please relieve me. I am on fire, my whole body is just burning, I am on fire, please relieve me. Baba says nothing, not much. Baba was silent then. He says, we translate for Baba, and I don't know who was the orderly then who translated it for Baba. He says, Baba points out to his forehead and he says that you are very, very lucky indeed that your samskars are being burnt. That washerman again entreats, Baba, I am on fire, please save me, please release me out of this agony. Baba says, you are very, very lucky. Your samskars are just burning up. Never mind, go. He goes away. Ultimately, he dies here as a leper. Now the point is, if I told this story to any outsider, he is liable to think in the first instance that because he disobeyed the master's order in 1922, the master cursed him and gave him leprosy. That was the first warning, remember. Baba had said, keep off from debauchery or you will get leprosy. To all appearance, it seems, he did not obey Baba's word. So he gets leprosy. Even then, Baba keeps him here and ultimately he dies. But the point is, how would you translate this man's existence? Baba's order in the first place, this man's having leprosy in the second place. Would you take it as a curse? No, sir. Definitely no, sir. A perfect master never curses anybody. Ready to curse, he is not perfect. Only half-baked yogis or people in the path or just intellectual beings, they shout out curses of no value at all. A perfect man would never curse. Then what was it? Baba's words said, keep off from debauchery or you will get leprosy. Yes. Baba forewarned him, you obey this order of mine and your samskaras of leprosy will be eliminated. He did not. He gathered vicious samskaras in debauchery. Plus, he suffered, what was he to suffer in this birth? And that's leprosy, that is that burning pain, the agony, that living hell. But at the same time, you can see how merciful a perfect master is. He gave him succor. He took him under the fold. And till the last breath, he kept him under the fold. That's why he said, you are very lucky. Your samskaras are being cut, your samskaras are being burnt up. That is it. People would translate it the other way. No, sir. That's not a fact. That's never, never a fact. A perfect man, a must. A God man, a man God will never, never curse because he sees himself in just everybody. He is a perfect man. Even a must will never do that. It's only a forewarning. Remember, it's only a forewarning. And if you obey that, you stall what is to come to you in a bad way. That's all. You help yourself. He has given you a fair warning. Remember, if you fail, you suffer. So don't take it as a curse at all. A perfect master never, never curses. He always blesses. He always blesses. He will never, never curse. Were he to curse, he would never be a perfect man. How could you call him a perfect man? How could that man be perfect if he curses? If he sees God in everything, he is saturated in God, he is all-knowing. He could never curse. Never. But people with half-baked knowledge would translate that he was cursed. No, sir. He was not cursed. He was forewarned to abstain from a certain act which would have helped his passage to suffering, an easy one. And if he just observes that, his suffering is lessened a great deal, which that man, which that particular soul wouldn't know. There are many in such instances in the Hindu mythology that such and such a yogi or such and such a saint cursed. No, sir. It's not a curse, it's a forewarning. Just a forewarning to do a certain thing. If you don't do it, you suffer for it. That's all. A perfect man never curses. There have been instances in Baba's life when men have There have been instances in Baba's life when men